Welcome to Sensibly Cynical. My name is Sean, and with me yet again is the one and the only Frank Jag. What's going on, Frank?
What's up, man?
I'm really excited for this episode. We have a very special guest. He is a longtime comedian, Raj Sharma. How you doing, Raj?
Good. Thank you guys for having me on, man.
Yeah, thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
So, yeah. What I want to talk about today is, you know, I want to ask you some questions about, you know, how'd you get into comedy and everything? So what was the beginning like for you?
I believe everything happens for a reason. I don't believe in coincidence, but I've been a fan of comedy since I was a kid. I had a cousin that had moved from India to study, of all things, computers, if you can believe it. Moved in, was living with us, and my parents were at a dinner party, and he brought in Eddie Murphy Delirious.
Wow.
And I was just, I've always been a fan of stand-up and cracking jokes and doing that, because I was bullied a lot as a kid, just to be honest. I was bullied growing up, and just a way to, I found it, it was, you know, hard to punch somebody if you're giggling, so I started doing jokes and things at an early age, and then I saw that, and just always had a love for it. And then when I was 25, I think, the girl that I was dating took me to the Addison Improv in Addison, Texas to see stand-up as my Christmas present.
Yeah.
There was a guy named Paul Varghese who was on stage. Paul's this phenomenal Indian comic here in Dallas. I saw him and I was like, oh my God, we can do this. Like, I just needed to see one. You know what I mean? One Indian comic. I was like, oh my God, we can do this.
Yeah.
And I talked to him and he told me about a workshop that was being offered at the Improv. Like, can't teach to be funny.
Sure.
Teach you how to structure a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, that's all I need. I just need the formula.
I don't know anything about that, so.
Yeah.
So a lot of improv is really off the whim, right? It's kind of like you go with the flow?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the chain, the comedy club chain. I do a lot of crowd work, so that is all off the top.
Right. That's what I heard. You're really good with that, so.
Yeah, thanks, man. And so I took this workshop, and then 8 weeks, it was 8 weeks, so it was every Saturday. And at the end of it, they're like, give you 5 minutes. We'll make sure you have 5 minutes worth of time, struggling worth of polished material.
Sure.
And you get to perform in front of family and friends at the Improv. And I think back then it was like a couple $100. And I was like, that's worth it. I mean, even if I just do this as a side thing, $250, I get to 8 weeks, I get to learn how to write, you know, material, and it's my old stuff.
Sure.
And went up and it was sold out, and I did my set, and it was supposed to be 5 minutes, and with applause breaks and laughs, it was 7 minutes and 45 seconds.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, you know, I think we keep doing this. And then because there was such a shortage of Indian comedians, we got work really early on. So I was 3 months in when Paul and I started Indians at the Improv. And that show ran. That was the first South Asian mainstream comedy showcase in North America at the time in 2002.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, we just ran it, you know, it was Indians of the Improv, it was me and Paul and three white guys. So, you know, other opportunities started happening, so we kind of left that show. And we get together every now and again, like we did one a couple of years ago. That was the first time in 10 years that all of us happened to be in the same city. I happened to be back in Dallas. So that was just a quick thing that we ended up selling that show out too. So every chance we get to do, we kind of bring it back. So that's kind of how it started.
Yeah, so what did you do after that show? How long did that last?
The first time we did it, I mean, it's you know, when you're starting those shows off, the club manager's like, we'll give you a date. Like, I opened my stupid mouth, I was like, we'll sell it out. Paul's like, shut up, we don't know if there's even an audience. We got the date, and I was flying on my first road gig ever. I was doing a comedy club in Lubbock, Texas called Froggy Bottoms.
Okay.
And on that Friday, I'm flying out, and I run by the club, I'm like, how many tickets have we sold? And they're like, 3. And I was like, 300? They're like, no, 3. And I was like, oh, shit, because the show's on Tuesday, but all right. And then that Sunday, I came home, and I'm like, where are we at now? And they're like, 33. I'm like, I don't think we're selling the show out. But we got there a couple hours early for the show.
Uh-huh.
And it was at 197, and the phone lines were all lit up. We did it at two and a half years, I think, we ran that show between Dallas and Houston.
Okay, so you just did those two mainly? You did a lot of Texas?
Yeah, and then, you know, what was the big thing then, this trend started where, at Indian weddings, like, if you didn't have a comedian, your wedding wasn't the talk of the town.
Right.
So we started getting all these, like, we were doing, I mean, anything to make money at that point, weddings, engagements.
Right, and they're all drunk anyways, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when it's weddings, like, people really don't, like, try to negotiate on pricing.
Sure.
You're like, hey, I want $800 for back then, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm, something to provide levity, yeah.
Yeah, so, and there was bragging rights, like, oh, your wedding had a singer, as all of them do. Okay. Well, we had a comedian, so everybody was trying to book us in advance. So we did that, and then like tours started popping up. Like we did a 16-city tour called The Gurus of Comedy, which was amazing. You know, that's when we started getting a lot of press and a lot of heat.
When was this? When did you start getting a lot of buzz?
This is 2006 was that tour, the 16-city tour, and that was based out of these great promoters out of New York. They really knew what they were doing, and like they set up press with all the South Asian outlets in every city that we were in, and then they tied us in with like these Indian promoters in town, so there were after parties that we got paid to go to, so on and so forth. So just got really lucky early on, and kind of stayed lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Touch wood since then. So.
So how long before then did you get in contact with HBO?
Here's what happened. They were doing a comedy competition called The Lucky 21. And we went up to the club, the local Addison Improv here, and everybody did a show. And from the show, they had recorded our sets in front of the audience and submitted to HBO.
Okay.
Here's where it gets weird. Like, I didn't like where I was in the lineup. This is just me, you know what I mean? I was like, they're not gonna get to me. So I asked the manager, I was like, hey, can I send in my own copy? And he's like, no, don't worry about it. We got you, we're gonna get everybody covered, we're gonna make sure everybody watches it, and everybody gets a good look. And I walked out, and I love the manager till this day. I mean, I'm like, I don't know. Don't know if I like that. So I went ahead and sent it in, just for the hell of it.
Right, off a whim, sure.
Yeah, and so I didn't think any. I didn't get a phone call. I didn't get an email. So I'm like, all right, cool. No big deal. No harm, no foul. Didn't get it. I remember Paul Marquise sending me a message saying, congrats. And I was like, on what? he's like, the HBO thing. And I go, didn't get it, dick.
yeah.
Sending me a congrats. And he's like, stupid, look online. And I went to their site, and I wasn't selected in the 20 that they'd picked. They had a wild card round because there were so many people that they were vying for, they didn't know what to do.
Right.
So they just set up a wild card round, and there's my face.
Wow.
So I'm like, I didn't even know. And then I start going through my email, and when you're starting out, you're not expecting to get an email from anybody like that.
Sure.
And they're like, congratulations, and it's weeks old.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
They're like, congratulations on making it to the wild card round of the Lucky 21. If you win, we're going to fly you guys all out to Vegas and then do this really quick show.
Sure.
I was 2 weeks in, like, late to the game. So I started getting people, because you had to vote online. It was back in those days.
Right.
It was also one of those back in those days where I didn't know you could refresh and re-vote for yourself. because everybody learned that trick except for me. Like, it was one of those things. Like, I didn't know that way. Like, I think I hit 1,100 votes, but the guy who won, who was a friend of mine now, we actually talked about it a couple of years ago. I mean, he killed it with like 20-some-odd thousand votes. Like, he was already a touring headliner. He just contacted his mailing list.
Right.
The thing about it was they did all this huge process. They did the whole thing state by state, and I don't think the show aired.
Really?
So, yeah, so that was good for me because it buzzed me into Crackle. I don't know if you guys have heard of Crackle.
Vaguely.
Crackle's Netflix and Hulu for stand-up.
Okay.
For comedy shows.
Yeah.
So they saw that off that, and I won their Highwire competition.
Okay.
Which then sent me to the Hollywood Improv to be put in front of their bookers. So then I did that. I got my 50 minutes, got passed at that club. I wasn't even living in the city. And got passed at that club.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then that was one of those things where now it was generating a little more buzz, and that was booking me into more and more clubs. And so it just kind of went from there. So had it not been for me sending my stuff into HBO on my own, who knows, man? I mean, that's crazy. I never even thought about it.
So that was all in, you said, Vegas?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you started doing Nevada, or was it just strictly Las Vegas, the Strip?
No, it was just for...
Oh, no, but I'm saying, but... After then, did you get any push there, or was it just strictly for that?
I started getting a kind of a buzz, wherever bookers come in from all other cities. So you started getting buzz in those cities, and that's back then. You were getting the feature weeks, so it wasn't beneficial for me in the sense of flying to, like, let's say Cincinnati for $600.
Right, because the cost of airfare and whatever.
Yeah, so I'd be like, no, but I did start headlining the Southwest.
Okay.
So that kind of moved me up a little bit quicker. I mean, no, a lot bit quicker. It takes years and years and years.
Sure.
So that was just one of those things. And I'm telling you, because, you know, if you're honest with yourself, back then we were a novelty act. Like, no, like, oh my God, a guy from India? Like, that's what they're... Like, we're not known for... When you think of Indians, you're like, oh man, stand-up comedy. That's not the first thought that ever comes in anybody's head. So that's why it was like, okay, we'll put him in the club because we're going to get this audience that we've never had. So they're going to tap into the South Asian market.
So how much of your routine do you try to put towards the fact that you're Indian? Do you try to make that...
I do. I'm very proud of my heritage, so I just let it know. But I talk about my family a lot. Mm-hmm. So it's automatic going to come up because I did it once without mentioning our background. I did my dad's voice. When people think I'm making fun of his accent, it's not that. I'm just doing how he talks.
Yeah.
And I had an Indian lady in the audience get mad.
Yeah.
Saying that I was Indian shaming, and I'm like, huh?
Well, yeah, it's funny because I don't know, do you watch the show America's Got Talent? Do you check that out? Did you watch the latest season? There was a guy who actually made it far with Tourette syndrome.
Yeah, he's a buddy of mine, Sam Cabra.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Tell him I think he's amazing. He's hilarious.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, wow, that's incredible. And see, he didn't do that disease. He used it as kind of like a springboard. But even without that, he's hilarious. The way he did his jokes and stuff.
Yeah, and I like to think, like, I don't have to mention that I'm Indian or whatever. But when I start talking about my family is when I kind of got in trouble before, because people were like, why do you have to do the accent? Because they talk like this.
Yeah.
So now I have to kind of set it up so you know.
Right.
Sam, you gotta get Sam on your show. His story is amazing.
Tell him about the show and, you know, Sensibly Cynical, and let him know, you know, he can Google us or find us.
I'll get you guys in touch for sure. Like, his story is pretty incredible, and what happened with him in the industry, it's pretty crazy. Because his buddy, the year before, went pretty far. Drew Lynch and him were on a tour together.
Uh-huh.
And...
Yeah.
When he got America's Got Talent, they ended up just putting Drew out.
I'm always curious about that. I'll have to ask him when we get him on the show how that casting process is like. I'm always curious about how that works.
I've done it. A friend of mine is one of the producers, and she has me come.
Oh, I don't know how much you can say about it, but...
No, I mean, I've never advanced further than this one room. So, I mean, I just... But no, so they're just three judges in a room. It's not the judges. It's just three people in a room. And... It was like, so tell me what's so extraordinary about yourself. And I'm like, brown, and I'm a comic. Like, I'm out of ammo after that. Like, I'm like, that's all I got. I got some crazy good jokes. So right after, when I basically was, my problem is honesty. So when I was like, hey, I'm brown and I'm funny, that's pretty much all I got. And you just see a couple of them like, okay, and just start staring, like working on their laptop. And then one actually watched. And then like, thanks. And I'm like, oh, I'm not getting this. Walk out. It's pretty obvious now. You go from there, and if they like you there, then you go through another round of different producers.
Sure, that's what I hear.
Yeah.
You know, and then I'm always curious about how, you know, all the footage they show of the people in line, how many of those actually even get into the process, you know? That always curious.
Yeah, I mean, it always stunned me when people are like, man, I didn't think they were going to get voted on. I'm like, they had a pre-story.
Yeah. They bring some of these on, like recruit people. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, when they're like, how did you know? I'm like, because they had a whole thing. They were in his hometown. They were interviewing his parents in their kitchen. I'm pretty sure they're not going to spend that kind of money to go, spend that kind of cash. So once you know how the industry kind of works, you can go, oh, okay.
That's how they bring these people on from different countries. But... Let's get back to your history. So what happened after you got involved in Vegas? What happened from there? How'd you get your own special, and what was the process?
Yeah, I was working in Dallas, and I'd gotten lip service from a lot of headliners before about, I'm gonna take you on the road, you're gonna be my guy, you're this, you're that, I wanna mentor you. Fine, whatever. And I was working with Brian Callen in 2010. And Brian is an amazing friend, brilliant comic and actor, and he saw my set on a Friday night. He was the headliner, but he would always get there late. I mean, those guys don't have to get in.
Sure.
So it's a few minutes before they have to go on. So he went on stage and was like, give it up for Raj one more time. The guy was killing. that's cool. And then we went. I went over with a friend to the bar across the hallway from the improv, and she was like, "Hey, he's looking for you." And I see him looking around, and I flag him down, and he goes, "You got to move to LA, man." He goes, "You're wasting your time here."
Right.
And I was like, no, man. I'm top four in the Southwest, and
yeah.
I was like, I get all this work, and I'm booked, 30 some odd weeks out of the year, and I can pick and choose where I go. And I've done New York, I've done Vegas now, I've done Hollywood. Good. I don't really need to move. I can always fly back and forth. And he's like, your excuses are amazing.
He straight called you out.
He's like, what do you have left to do here? He's like, have you headlined the improv here? I was like, I'm here, Houston. Tempe, he's like, okay, so then you have nowhere else to go. So if you want to stay here, and if it's just about booking weeks and selling merch, and money, stay here. He was like, but if you want to get better and get good, you got to move New York, LA, so pick one. I go, I never do the winters in New York.
You're not that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Frank's from New York, so...
Yeah, so that's why it's not bad. I'm not taking a kid from Texas and putting him in a New York winter.
They'd cry.
I would cry for 4 months. So he goes, don't look now, but you just picked where you wanted to move to. And then I'm trying again. I'm like, I don't really have... Because it's a fear thing, right?
Right.
I'm scared. So I'm like, I don't have all the contacts that, I would need to be successful out there. He's like, come hang out with me for a week. I'll introduce you to everybody. Mm-hmm. And then it's up to you. And I'm like, all right, cool. And then he walked away. And my girlfriend, at the time, was like, isn't that amazing? I was like, it sure was really good lip service. You say that about everybody. I go, did you notice he didn't give me his number? So how am I going to contact
him? Mm-hmm.
And then not 2 minutes later at the bar, I get tapped on the shoulder. Turn around, it's Brian. And he goes, God, I feel like a dick. I was like, why? He goes, I said all that cool shit that I didn't give you my number. And then he gave me his number, we set it up, and a couple weeks later I was in L.A., and we're walking into the Laugh Factory, and I can hear him go, Jamie, talk to Jamie Posada, the owner, he's like, this is the kid I've been telling you about. And I can hear them, and Jamie goes, oh, the kid from Texas. And Jamie gives me a hug and goes, we're expecting really big things.
So, wow, talk about pressure.
Yeah, and then the first people I meet that night, the first people I meet in the club was Sebastian Maniscalco, Bill Burr, Bob Saget, and Dane Cook.
Wow, Bob Saget's like a legend. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah, he's hilarious. And they were trying to bust balls, but he's damn near a billionaire, so you can't. And they're like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, hey, Bob, did you chopper in? Is your chopper, like, somebody's like, I think somebody's like, is your chopper on the roof? And he goes, I have a jetpack. Choppers are for poor people.
That's awesome.
You got nothing. You have zero comeback. Like, I'm just standing there like, I'm just literally standing there like, what the fuck am I doing here in this group? And he's like, okay. And then we went to the Comedy Store, same thing. And then we went to some of the smaller clubs, whatever. And he's like, all right, man, I did my part. He's like, I don't want to talk to you till you move out here. I was like, well, that's weird because we have to work together in San Antonio in November. He's like, don't talk to me. We'll talk in November and then don't talk till you move. I moved out in 2011, March. It was March 22nd. My first show ever would be that 24th at the Laugh Factory called Fresh Faces.
Okay.
And that was all, courtesy of Brian and a buddy of mine who used to live in Dallas but was now booking that show. April 9th, my mother got diagnosed with leukemia.
Oof. Oh, wow.
So I was flying back and forth. So basically it was just, I was flying in the club here in Dallas, and I want to mention him by name, Sean Trainer, who's the manager of the Addison Improv. His parents both died from cancer. And he's like, listen, anytime you come in to visit your mom, let us know. We'll give you work. That way you're still making money, you can do shows at night, and take care of your mom during the day.
Yeah, man, I'm sorry to hear that.
So I was doing that back and forth. So basically I was flying in here for 2.5, sometimes 3 weeks, working 3 weeks and seeing my mom during the day. And so I'd go back,
sure,
pay rent, bills, and maybe get out one or two nights to the clubs. But I'm also leaving a girl, because my girlfriend was living in L.A., leaving her at the time. I'm leaving her for weeks at a time, and then that relationship started to go south, because as it should, you're leaving somebody alone for weeks and weeks and weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mother passed away June of 2012.
Oh, man, sorry.
Yeah, thank you, man, thank you. She was a champ. But my dad's like, listen, she's gone now, you don't have to keep flying back home, I'm good. Put all your energy and your whatever into stand-up. And I was like, got it. And got back like the first week of August, and this is a crazy story. A girl that used to work in Dallas, who Christina Shams, she used to work for NBC Channel 5 here on their digital side.
Sure.
She would come in, she's a Persian girl, so she would come in, like always come to our shows, like the Indians at the Improv, or if I was headlining, and review the shows for Channel 5.
Uh-huh.
Well, in 2010, she left, and she's like, I got an internship at the Laugh Factory in Hollywood. She got the internship, and had a hostess, a box office girl quit that job, and they had a hostess quit, so she took that job. Then she worked her way up to floor manager, from floor manager to manager, so by the time I came back August 1st, after my mother's passing, she was now the general manager of the club.
Oh, wow. There's an in.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's no such thing as coincidence, right?
Yeah.
Right,
so,
that's an in.
A girl I've known for a decade is now the general manager of the club I'm trying to get into. As I was gone, all that momentum that I had with Callan was gone. Because it was like, cool, man, he's the guy I was telling you about. Well, where is he? Fuck, I don't know. Let me call him. And, hey, man, I'm in Texas for the next 3 weeks. Cool, get back. Where are you, Brian? Hey, man, I'm shooting in Calgary for the next 2 months. I'm like, oh, okay. So it just...
Right.
So I just randomly called her, and I was like, let me take you to dinner. Catch me up. I was like, catch me up on what's going on in the scene. I've been gone for, like, 2.5 months. And she's like, hey, I talked to Jamie about you. And again, he doesn't remember who I am now.
Because
he meets...
comics.
And watches comics every day.
Right, so there's always someone trying to make an impact, right? So
she had booked a show, and one of the Indian comics that was on the show didn't do well, and it was like, okay, fine, no big deal, everybody has an off night. And then the second week, the same thing happened. So she's like, why do you keep booking this guy? And he's like, well, I don't have anybody else. Russell Peters is now too big to come in on a weekly basis, so I don't have anybody. She goes, I got a guy. And August 14th, I go up, and I'm on the Kevin Nealon show, but it's Dom Herrera hosting, and I got a 6-minute guest spot. You're like, don't fuck this up. So I'm walking in, and this is where just life got crazy. Like, I'm walking in as Jamie Masada is walking out. Okay, well, he's not going to watch, so this is just a guest spot, and no pressure. And I'm walking on stage, and I look over, and I see the door open, and him run back inside. And post up on the wall where he stands to watch my set. And I'm like, okay, now I'm a little nervous. And I'm racing through my first minute. I'm getting good laughs, but I'm racing. And I stop. Well, after I got an applause break, and I go, breathe. Just breathe. And I have the set. You can literally see me inhale and exhale, like this big, deep breath. And then I went in. And like I said, cuss a little too much on stage. I get off, and I was like, that was a good set, but I cussed way too much. And I see Jamie's, I'm in the back of the room, and Jamie's not even looking at me. He's looking at the next comic up. And a buddy of mine who started stand-up comedy in Dallas, is now a great comedian and actor as well, Dustin Ibarra, was sitting next to me. And he tapped me on the shoulders, like, all right, man, I'm out of here. I'll talk to you later. And I turn to say, you know, give him a hug. And Jamie Masada's looking at me, takes his finger, and he points. And he just makes the motion, like, come here now. And he's stone-faced.
Oof.
And I'm like, fuck. And I've heard what happens. I've heard that he tells you, like, okay, come back in 6 months. And that's his polite way of going, I'll see you in a couple years.
Dace.
Yeah. So he goes, what do I even say? And I go, and I started to say, I'm sorry. I literally put my hand out and started to say, I'm sorry. And I go, I'm really, he goes, I love everything you did, buddy. Every single thing you did, buddy.
Nice.
And I go, and I started to say, I'm sorry, and I went, I'm really glad you did. And he goes, I pass you for all my clubs. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, call Cecily in the morning and set up shows for Hollywood, Long Beach, and Vegas.
Perfect.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So that's a Tuesday night, right? This is crazy. Tuesday night, I get passed by Jamie Masada at this club. I get to book all the 3 laugh actors that were, there's more at the time, more now, though that's the time. I get an email to visit management, to visit with potential managers on Thursday. I have management on Friday. 2 weeks later, I get the CBS showcase. And the CBS showcase is 3,800 people had applied, 2,200, I believe, auditioned for 22 spots. And I got it, and it was the first thing I'd ever auditioned for in my life.
Jeez.
Wow.
That's pretty, that's pretty well done, though.
Yeah, I mean, it was, and then it's bizarre, because now I'm like, you're doing this, it's basically, it's the CBS sketch comedy diversity showcase, whatever, so it's, you're doing sketch comedy, there's 20 writers in the room writing for you. It's a 3.5 month master's course, basically, for 4 shows. You do 2 afternoon shows and 2 evening shows. And
wow.
It's all industry. So, I mean, I'm going from literally my mom, you know, has passed away. I'm coming in. Now I'm doing shows. Now I'm driving to the CBS lot. And, like, you know, the security guard knows your name by week 2. And, you know what I mean? So it's like, and it just, it's weird because it, you become used to it. So you're like, just going to the CBS lot. And sometimes I would stop and go, hey, Dick, stop for a second.
This is real.
This is still pretty cool every time.
Yeah.
Instead of just walking by like, hey, Gary, how are you? And just walking on the lot like I owned CBS.
Yeah.
Just don't be a dick and have fun. And we did that, and it was insane. I mean, I went from once prior to that having no management to now having a manager and my choice of agency, because I had some really big agencies on the table. And I was like, all right, I'll just sit and pick and choose one.
So you're like a free agent kind of in sports.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was like. I'm like, you know, you're like, who's gonna go to work for me? Who's going to give me the most money? And then, like, auditions started. Like, my emails were just every day. There would be, you know, 10, 12 auditions, you know, it's all for pilot season. Which, as a brown guy, you can't say in airports, by the way. I learned that a very hard way.
You said you can't what?
Trust me.
You said you can't what in airports?
You can't say pilot season. I'm not making this up. This isn't Tampa, Florida.
No. Yeah. Well. Yeah.
So I was in the airport and I'm flying back to LA, and a lady, the sweet, you know how sweet old ladies are. They just want to talk before they get on the flight.
Sure.
Party, yeah. I was like sitting next to her. I'm like, I'm good. She goes, you live here in Florida? You're from Los Angeles? I go, you know, originally I'm from Texas, but I live in Los Angeles now. I'm just getting back. I wanted to say, she goes, did you see much of Tampa while you were here? And I was like, no, not really, but I never do in any city I'm at. So I was like, I'm just going to go. I would like to spend a couple more days, but I have to get back to LA. And she's like, why? And I got in a call from CBS. They were doing a show, a sketch comedy show, to go up against SNL, was the idea. They were going to launch it online, and if it got popular, they were going to, whatever. And I go, I got to go back to L.A. on Monday. I'm shooting a pilot.
Oh.
While you're in the airplane, right? While you're in the airplane.
This is while we're at the gate.
Jeez.
I swear, she's like, Jesus, why? And I go, it's pilot season.
You just compounded it. Yeah.
She literally stands up and she goes, they have a season. So now the security guy comes over, the TSA guy is like, what is it? I go, first out, I'm filming the first episode of a TV show. And he goes, okay, all right, just pick and choose your words, buddy. Yeah, you're right, my bad, brown guy with a beard, sorry.
It's pilot season.
Yeah, so I ended up doing that. The pilot, they never found really, it was really cool, because it was David Burka produced it, which is Neil Patrick Harris' husband. They wanted that to be the lead in, because he was wanting to take over or start his own variety show at some point with CBS, which I don't think that worked out either. But he wanted that to be the lead in. And crazy, one of my castmates on that is my friend and now megastar Tiffany Haddish.
Oh, really?
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, wow. she was one of the people in the pilot. There's a couple of people, like Nico Santos was in it, who's now on television as well. There's a bunch of people. We did this really great pilot. It was really great work. But and then and then you start headlining Vegas, and then that becomes a thing. Your face is on a marquee outside of a hotel. Well, like that was cool for me because the first time when I filmed my special, Tropicana, flew my dad in, and the way I took it from the airport, like he had to pass my billboard.
No.
I was like, I want to show you why I didn't become a doctor. and he was super like, yo, this is cool.
You know, you should have took a selfie or a picture.
Yeah, I could have, but no. But yeah, that was that progression where he's like, I passed you from all like from all the clubs. Here's management. Here's the CBS showcase. Oh, by the way, November you're headlining Vegas for the first time. Okay, so I'm headlining Vegas 2 shows a night, 7 days, so 14 shows total. It's crazy. It's fun. And then he's like, cool. Jamie's like, I'm producing your special. And I go, awesome. How many specials have you guys made over the course of your years and why do you think mine would be so special? And he goes, none, but I would really like to start getting into that. And so myself and Tim Gaither were the only two that the Laugh Factory have ever produced.
Wow.
And they haven't since then. So I don't know if it's because, I don't know if they didn't make any money off of ours.
Yeah.
But they're like, you know what, we produced two. That's cool. Cool the Jets now.
Hey, Roz, I got a question about, if we can backtrack, about how much is, like, let's say, cursing? Like, I know you said that, you know, you said previously that you were told you cuss too much. How much of that is like a fine balance? Like, is that hard to judge? Like, do you monitor yourself, or do you have someone to say, hey, tone it down, like you did?
My dad's one. He's like, in the beginning, he's like, you use too much bad language. Because he doesn't. It was weird. My mom, the dirtier the joke, the better. My dad, the other way around.
Really?
Would you think, like, it's a guy? I was like, it's a dude. Like, he would like dirty jokes.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Frank's family is saying the same thing about this show, Raj. Don't worry.
So it's always like somebody that I'm like, whoever I'm dating at the time, and now it's my wife.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, that was a little excessive on that. And you don't really need to say fuck there, and you know, this person a bitch here. And,
what you're saying is, you gotta self monitor yourself,
there's,
right?
There's sentence enhancers, though, aren't they?
It's modern vernacular. Like, that's how kids talk.
Right.
Right.
That's how everybody talks.
That's how I talked in fourth grade.
Yeah,
and now it's not. Now it's not. Now it's too bad for adults.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Is like nobody's. Everybody still thinks it's like the 1800s. Where I was like, I declare.
Hey, Raj, I just substituted third grade. Trust me, the language nowadays with kids is incredible.
Yeah, I was just working with Russell Peters here in Dallas, and my buddies that really want to come see the show, and he's, you know, his daughter's 16, and he goes, I don't know if I want to bring my daughter. I don't want her around that kind of language, really. And I go, she's how old? I'm like, she knows worse shit than we do, bro. Like, she knows things we don't even know.
Yeah.
Right.
So, so that's just how people talk. So when I'm on, like, and it's not an active thought anymore, because just go, hey, fucking, what's going on, dude? And there was no reason to say fucking right there.
Right.
No, but that's how we talk now, so... I try to be aware of it, but I'm also very well aware that I do cuss, and I'm aware that I do it for emphasis and jokes.
Right.
But I'm never vulgar or mean. Like, I don't get like obscene or like blue comedy, as they used to call it. Now that means I just found out that means liberal now.
That makes sense.
Yeah. They're like I was doing a casino. They're like, please stay away from all blue material. And I was like, oh, I don't do anything about like sex. They're looking at me like I'm an idiot. I'm like, is that not what it is anymore?
Well, you know, society is PG now.
Yes, it is. And they're like, no, we don't want you to do it. Like, the audience is like usually really rich, older white people who are not Democrats. And I was like, oh, is that what blue means now? Well, fuck, I didn't know that. I'm going to say some awful shit then. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know that that's what it meant. I don't do any political stuff. I mean, I do that I save that for my page.
Right.
For my Instagram and for my Facebook page, but I don't do any of that on stage because, I don't know, I think we get enough of it during the day, right?
Right.
And the late night shows, let them do that. I'm going to tell you how Indians aren't known for being athletic. Let me just, I'm going to talk about that for 20 minutes, and then I'm going to talk about how nobody beats their kids anymore for 20 minutes. Which is true, nobody does that. But anyway, so that's kind of the progression, man, and it's been one of those things where I started performing overseas. I started doing that, was really cool, and I'm pretty well known. I perform in India a lot.
Nice.
Yeah, and so I've done UK, I've done Ireland, I've done Canada. I mean, I'm like, it's just one of those things that, yeah. I mean, and it was one of those things where it was 1 minute, it was a Tuesday afternoon, and then the next thing, it was, what the fuck just happened? And it was super overwhelming. But I'm also grateful for it. I know it was just my mom pulling the strings, going, you know what, you're not going to be able to do this shit without me, so... Let me go ahead and go do this here. So, but yeah, that's kind of where the ride's been, man.
So, you do a lot of work with the crowd. You know, you pull from them a little bit. Do you plan to do that, or do you do that as like fillers, or?
No, I mean sometimes I just you know you just want to go up and try new shit, so you're just bouncing it off the audience. It started on that Gurus of Comedy tour in 2006. We were in San Jose, and there was a guy heckling every comic. I was the next one up, and the comic in front of me gets off. He's like, he's pissed. He's like, fucking heckler. It's ruining the goddamn show. And I had never done crowd work before. Mm-hmm. I had never talked to anybody. So from there, cut to when I first started doing stand-up in 2002. This was 2006, San Jose. In 2002, I was doing a show at a place called Andy's in Denton, Texas. And I thought I was in show business, fellas. It was, I had to do 7 minutes, and I was getting $50 and 2 drinks. made it.
Right.
And I did really well, and the guy who owns the place is like, come back next week. That was amazing. I'll give you $100. I'm like, oh, I'm getting double the pay because of my genius? Okay. I go back the next week. He didn't know that that was the only 7 minutes I had, and I didn't know that's the same crowd every week.
Yeah.
So the same crowd that was high-fiving me, buying me shots, and girls giving me their number, is now literally pin drop silent.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And this guy is like, this one guy in the audience is like, heard it! And then everybody kind of giggled. And I just keep trucking through, and he's now doing the punchlines.
Oh.
My jokes. Like, before I can get to them.
Yeah.
And now the audience is loving this guy. And I look up and Paul Varghese is like, giving me like the cut it, like, get out of here.
Dang.
Go now, and I'm like, absolutely not. I'm going to do my time like a trooper. I'm going to get my $100. I know I never got paid. Yeah, so everything, like, I got in my car. I walk off stage in silence. And I could hear my shoes clicking on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
That's how quiet it was. I get in my car. And you know, it's one of those things, like, everything you ever want, like, when you get in a fight or a verbal thing with somebody, and you walk away, and you're like, oh, fuck, I should have said that. Oh, I said that. So I just kind of stored all those in my brain. And in 2006... this poor heckler got what Raj in 2002 wanted to say to the guy in the audience. In San Jose, they can turn up the lights in different areas of the club. And I walk out on stage, and he says, I mean, he screams something right off the bat. And I go, man, I want to talk to you. And I go, pull up the lights over here. And I go, what's your name? As the lights come up, it's really big Mexican dude with a Corona resting on his stomach. And he goes, Junior? And I go, your name is Junior? And then I went, I was like, you haven't... There was nothing junior about you but the cheeseburgers you ate on the way here.
Oh.
Everything I wanted to say to that guy in Dallas is what Junior is now getting.
Yeah.
At one point, he picks up 2 white napkins and waves them. Like, he's like, I'm done. I go, now sit down and shut the fuck up for the rest of the show. I might even hear you laugh again. I'm coming back at you.
Jeez.
And the promoter of the show about... Because it was that same Gurus of Comedy Tour, I get an email, because this was pre, you know, no texting and all that.
Yet. Yeah, sure.
So I get an email, and it's me on the front cover of this, it's called India West Magazine. India West Newspaper. And it's like, the Gurus have arrived. It's like, you know, Indian comics have arrived. It's official, blah, blah, blah. And then it goes on about the show for about a quarter of a page. And then the next page and a half was just about my performance.
Right. Wow.
And that went out to 250,000 South Asians. And so that then started getting me booked. Like, I was getting called for, you know, all these, you know, Indian people now have shows at Caroline.
Uh-huh.
You know, they have shows at
Caroline's on Broadway, sure.
Yeah, and so now I'm starting, hey, can you come headline so-and-so? And I'm like, cool. And then while I would do that, I would find the club manager and be like, hey, by the way, I don't just only do Indian shows. Here's my reel. And so that's how I kind of got in there.
Hey, Roger, I gotta ask you something. So when it comes to booking, how do you work with agents? Do you have, like, your own, obviously you have your own agent, but do you have multiple agents? Like, how does that work nowadays?
Usually when I was signed with Innovative, I'm a free agent right now, again, because my agent, personal, he left to go to a different agency.
Okay.
I didn't want to go there.
So oh, sure.
We're looking at different agencies right now. Usually when you get in the comedy department, like, my old agent, Ian, He did both. I would get auditions from him. So he had, you know, junior agents under him that, like, hey, go, you know, if you see anything for these people, these are my clients.
Sure.
You know, book them. And then he would have somebody under him as well that booked clubs. So I would just, from that same person, I would just get an email from Ian, like, hey, you're doing the Atlanta Comedy Theater.
Right.
So-and-so and so-and-so week. And then also, here's your audition for, you know, whatever TV show. So that's they deal with. I mean, that's the thing. Like, they make 10% of your money, so they want to keep you as busy as possible. So they're constantly calling comedy clubs and trying to get you work.
Yeah.
And then you can get to a point where after a while, which is nice. Like, my wife is my manager.
Oh, wow.
Which, yeah, she does PR and talent management. So she books a lot of stuff because she has a really good reputation, really good rapport with a lot of the clubs that I work at, because she'll be the one, like, set it up. And then what she did early on is when my agent was setting stuff up, she would send thank you cards. And, like, with our information or whatever, her email for, you know, booking opportunities or whatever.
Yeah.
And now she just, you know, she's like, okay, I'm going to start in August. I'm going to book the rest of the year. And clubs that we've done over, you know, over this course of my career, I just call and go, okay, you know, he has such and such month and such weeks open.
Yeah.
And they're like, cool, you know, well, we're already booked, or, you know what, let's try again maybe for beginning of next year. So you kind of know where you're at.
Right.
And then, so I really, the only thing I have to do is when I get to the venue.
Right.
Is when I have to be like, hey, listen, thank you so much. You know, just be good to the bookers and be good to the managers. Yeah. Always the key to a longevity in stand up is being amazing to the staff.
So Raj, now you noticed, you said that when it was all going up, you know, you kind of got numb to it and you had to bring yourself back to reality. How often, with all these good things and all these bookings and all these shows, how often do you find yourself having to pull yourself back down to reality?
Oh, I do. Oh, trust me, my wife's Australian. They're not starstruck by anything. They're not impressed by shit. So anytime I go, hey, check out how cool this is. She's like, yeah, that's good. Like, oh, okay, so it's not as cool as I thought it was.
Right.
And she's like, yeah. I mean, she's like, just simple shit like. She said this. What she says, she goes, at the other end, I go, why don't you come with me to Hermosa Comedy Magic Club? And she goes, ah, you doing the same set? And I was like, yeah. She's like, ah, let me know if you got something new.
Ooh.
Oh.
Like, ooh, shit.
Ooh, tough crowd.
That hurts. And she's, so I'll write, and she'll ask me, did you do new stuff? And I'm like, yeah, I did. She's like, okay, well, I'll come. I had one of those moments, you know, not too long ago where I'm upstairs at the Laugh Factory. And so I was just sitting down in a booth, and it's me, to my right is Daryl Hammond, to his right is Harlan Williams, to my left is Jeremy Hotz and then Don Barrera.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just sitting there, we're just bullshitting, and somebody says, you know, cracks a joke and hits a, you know, big laugh. And I just kind of sat back and I'm like, you got to realize how cool this is, dude. I know it's like, hey, we're just at the factory, the lounge, chilling, whatever, but you got to realize these are legends sitting around you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're allowing you to sit here is pretty fucking cool. So take this in for a second. So I do all that. I do that as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. And literally, because I've seen people that just become, like, that's not a big deal anymore.
Right.
Like, I don't ever want it to not be a big deal anymore. You know what I mean? I'm like, this is huge.
Sure.
Yo, I get to do this and be on the same show as all these guys. That's awesome. Buddies of mine, they're like, yeah, man, I mean, it's cool. I mean, I'm not really...
Yeah.
It's like that Shania Twain. Like, it's not really impressive. And I'm like, I think it is. I think these guys are great. And you have people that are stand-ups that are like, well, I'm not really a fan of anybody. I'm like, but I grew up watching these dudes.
So, who was your big influences? Like, growing up, man. And stuff, and who got you interested, or was it just like a self startup?
I remember one of my earliest memories of school is, you know, getting bullied and getting picked. I was a really small kid. We're the only Indians in Mesquite in the early 80s. People didn't really even know what that was. They didn't know what we were. Is it like, are we Native American? Are we Mexican? Like, what are you? And I remember, like, getting pushed around. And I'm like, ah, man. And I would just make, you know, an observation, or I would say something funny, and I'd get a laugh, and I could tell, like, that tension was gone for a second. And I'm like, hold on, if I can just keep this going. So my first influence was the Reader's Digest, because they used to have the jokes in the back. I don't know if they still do, but they used to have jokes in the back. And I would memorize those, because my dad would get the Reader's Digest. So I'd memorize those. I would go to school and tell those. And then I knew the girls liked cartoon voices, so I started doing voices.
Mm-hmm.
And then, my cousin brought Delirious, and that was, like, mind-blowing. And so I was like, can you keep bringing comedy, these little VHS tapes, can you keep bringing them home with stand-up?
Sure.
And so I started watching, like, you know, Richard Pryor live on the Sunset Strip, and Red Fox playing Brown Paper Bag, and then the comics from The Tonight Show. There was a guy named Dennis Wolfberg, who was an amazing, amazing comedian. I think he did The Tonight Show over 20 plus times.
Wow.
Yeah, he had a deal. I mean,
How far back does he go? Like,
he's no longer with us, unfortunately. That's what he would have been. He would have been huge.
Okay.
And yeah, he was bizarre, man. He had just signed a deal with, I believe it was NBC, like this huge development deal. He was going to get a sitcom. And, you know, and these headaches won't keep going, they won't go away. Then nobody said anything. He just kind of wasn't there anymore, from what I hear. Because I would watch The Tonight Show and be like, oh, I wonder when he's going to have him back.
Right.
And then his wife sent out a press release saying, you know, Dennis passed away in his sleep, surrounded by friends and family, and he had a brain tumor. That was terminal.
Yeah.
But he was one of the greats. And then, you know, I just started watching when HBO and Showtime, when I got, you know, started getting older, you know, the comics they were having. Evening at the Improv was my favorite show to watch.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys remember back, I mean, I'm aging myself now, but I mean, Evening at the Improv was like, oh my God. And then I saw, you know, Henry Cho, and I'm like, oh my God, they got an Asian guy with a Southern accent. That's crazy. You don't think as an Indian kid growing up that that's an option for you. But
yeah.
It's, hey, you're going to be a doctor, you're going to be a lawyer, you're going to be an engineer.
Yeah, now when people think Asian comics, they think that guy from The Hangover, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah, Dr. Ken Jeong, who's a sweetheart, by the way. One of the nicest human beings.
Did you get a lot of pushback when you told your parents you wanted to be a comedian?
you don't really tell, kind of do. So I was still working. So if you're the child of an immigrant parent, you'll end up working with them. Like whatever business they do, you're going to be there too.
Right.
That's kind of how it works. So I was working for them, a day job at an office. They had a business where they were staffing nurses in hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, it was just no creativity involved. It's just pick up the phone, and the hospital would tell you what nurse they need, you go fill it, and then that was it. A monkey could do the job.
Yeah.
So
I hear you.
I would do that and get off at, you know, 5:30, and then go to wherever the open mic was going to be and just sit there till it started. And when you're starting out in the beginning, you know, you're not going up first. You're going up at the end. So that's kind of where it was. I was like, I'll just keep doing that. And then the thing with my parents, I can't speak for everybody, but mine was like, if you're making money, it's fine. But if you're not making money, then you need to, fear is that when they're gone, you're not going to be able to eat.
Right, because bills don't stop.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. So it's that people go, man, my parents don't like my dreams. I'm like, it's not that. It's not that they don't like your dreams. They have dreams too. But it's a fear thing. Like, if I do this, if my son does this, will he be able to sustain himself? So my dad basically put me under that test. He was like, you, 6 months, if you can pay your bills.
Right.
This was in like 2005. He's like, they're like, when are you going to be done with this? I said, you know what, I want to do this full time. He's like, okay, cool. We're not going to support you financially. We will support you with anything else. Come home, eat, whatever. But we're not giving you any money for your bills. And he goes, how long do you need? And it was 6 months, then it was, I go, give me a year. And he made me sign a contract.
Jeez.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah, saying that if I couldn't sustain it for a year, that I would go to law school.
Was there any small print in this contract?
Yeah, I think I financed his car. I don't know how. I think he got a bunch of money on the back end. But I mean, it was like, hey, you got a year, and if you can't do it, you're going to law school, and that's it.
Dang.
And he's like, no bitching, no moaning.
Right.
I'm giving you a shot. You're gonna honor this deal. I'm like, cool. We both signed it. And he's like, keep it with you. And I was like, oh, okay. And that was, like I said, 2005. 2006, this Gurus of Comedy Tour. My buddy Paul calls me and says, you know what? They're looking for comics for the Texas run. Three shows, it's Dallas, Austin, and Houston. And I was like, I'll take all three. Thank you so much. I mean, we're coming now 2 months away from this 1 year deadline. And they call and they say, okay, so write down the dates, and they start rattling off all 16. And I'm like, oh, I thought you needed for the Texas run. They like, if you can't do it, we understand. I go, no, I'll take all 16 dates. And I didn't say anything to anybody. I didn't tell anyone. We were going back and forth negotiating money, and we finally got the money right, and for both parties. Got the money right and signed the contract. Got my contract signed. And if you remember fax machines,
Yeah.
Fax to me, and then email to me, and I walk in, and I will never forget it. It's burned into my brain. My dad's typing away on the computer in his office, and I just slide the contract on top of the keyboard. And it's 16 cities, it's all this press, it's all the, you know, nice hotels, and blah, blah, blah. And he never even looks up at me, right? He just moves it to his inbox, and he goes, well, that was close. And then after that was like, you know what, we're good. Because I got that 16 city tour right after that, I think a couple months later.
Right.
Was one that was just all West Coast.
Okay.
I started doing that, and then the stuff from the newspaper that went out, people started booking me from that, and then money started going up, and so when they were like, hey, you're doing fine. And I always knew, like, when they were having people over to play cards, because all the newspaper or magazines with anything to do with me in it were all over the coffee table.
Right.
So they did that so that if anybody at the party is like, so how's Raj doing? My mom can point to something and go, look at the magazines, look at the articles. And I had an old recording of me from the club when I'd be playing on the TV, but on mute. And I'm like, okay, I guess you are proud. And it was funny because there was one of those beautiful moments. Growing up, my mother used to tell me that I talk too much. She's like, you talk too much, you need to stop talking so much.
Trust me, I get that all the time.
Yes, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. So keep fucking doing it.
I don't know. Sean talks a lot.
Yeah. Keep going. So you're gonna.
Yeah.
You can't find a brilliant thought.
Hey.
If you don't have 25 dumb ones come out of your mouth.
Hey, Raj. Quick story. Yeah. Saturday, I was at a coffee shop with a friend, and not even 3 minutes into the conversation, the two chicks behind us fucking moved. I swear to God, it was one of those, like, you know, small,
yeah.
Nothing major, yeah. just a small coffee shop in Pensacola. That's where we're based out of.
That's perfect, bro. I mean, those are probably the two chicks that had the toy poodle in their purse. Like,
I almost wanted to drop off my number before I left, but...
That would have been hilarious. Next time you do that. Next time you go, I can see how interested you were. I'm going to walk off. But yeah, my mom used to tell me I talk too much. She's like, I tell you talk too much. The whole time I'm growing up, you talk too much. Stop talking so much.
Yeah.
We're sitting in our hospital room, and it just hit me that she used to say that. And I look over and I go, hey, mom, remember that you said a problem with me is I talk too much? And she goes, yeah, you still talk too much. I go, what did you used to say about that? What did you used to tell me every single time? She goes, yeah, I told them, one day I hope you get a job where they pay you to talk. I just put my hands in the air. And she goes, oh my God. I go, yeah, now they pay me to talk. And she goes, and she literally starts laughing, goes, only you would have taken what I said, heard those words, and went, I'm going to find a fucking job where they do that. It's just like, that was just like you were spiteful. Like, oh, you think I talk too much? You think I can't find a job that pays me to talk? Oh, watch. that's kind of what happened then.
So, with comedy, is it something that you want to do forever, or do you just want to do it till it's not fun anymore? Or
I always say, man, the day it becomes work, I'll quit, because I don't want to have a job again. I mean, this is a great gig, I get to meet cool people. I get to talk to you guys. Like, what other job in the world allows this to happen?
Yeah, talk to random podcasts. Yeah.
Fuck yeah, that's awesome. You know what I mean? Like, that's great. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what else I would be good at. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My mom's like, you would have been a good doctor. I'm like, yeah, but I'm a great comic. I'll take good over great. You know what I mean? But yeah, the day it becomes work, or the day it starts getting to be too much to where it's messing with family or with health or anything like that, like, that's when I'd be like, you know what, let's take a step back for a second. But right now, everybody's happy and healthy, and we're working and always creatively doing something different, like, you know, writing television shows.
Right.
You know, getting, my wife and I just signed a 1-year production deal with this production company out of Culver City. Love Productions. Give them a shout out. So.
No, that's what I was going to say next. Is there anything you want to promote, or, you know, the floor is yours?
Yeah, man, we just got these three shows that we're in developing, and so hopefully one day they'll fucking buy it. but no, I mean, I'm not really plugging anything really right now. Just come to my pages, you know, all my social media. I'll tell you where I'm going to be. I'll give anybody that listens free tickets to shows. Come out, hang out. But you know, the show ideas that we pitched, I think, are pretty crazy. So they might, it's crazy enough, it might just work. You know what I mean? So,
I can post links on our Facebook page. Not a problem.
Yeah, sure. Just mine's just my everything on my social media is just at Comedian Raj. So Facebook,
yeah,
at Comedian Raj. Instagram's at Comedian Raj. Twitter's the same thing. I will say this is cool. Can I tell? I'm sure you have people that will listen to your show that might have voted for Trump. But I got into a 15-second Twitter battle with Scott Baio. Like that's pretty cool. So if you want to check out my Twitter, it's somewhere down in there. But it was pretty cool. I couldn't believe he wrote back. I was like, Chachi.
Yeah, Joni loves Chachi. You used to ask him, are you still banging Joni?
Well, I mean, he posted a picture of himself in front of a private jet. Okay, first of all, it's fucking Scott Baio. Okay. Like, if it was a fact that he owned a jet, I would quit life.
Yeah.
I would fuck comedy. I would stop breathing. Mm-hmm. When he posted a picture of himself in front of this jet. And he's a huge Trump supporter, and I think Trump's an idiot. So I go, at Scott Baio, you're lucky to fly coach. And he responded back with, calm down there, at Comedian Raj. And I go, you wrote back? And then I had to hit him because he wrote back. I'm like, ah, man. I didn't know you. At first I thought you wouldn't have time to write back to me. And then I remembered all the shows you're not on.
Oh.
Yeah, and then his followers started going back and forth.
Right.
But it was fun. So that's the only thing I would promote is the cool Scott Baio Twitter fight. But other than that, man, just come check out a show. And I'd love to come, hang out with you guys next time in Florida.
Yeah, are you here a lot or probably?
Am I what?
I saw you in Florida a lot, or is that just a state?
No, I mean, I've only done the University of South Florida twice.
Hey, my brother went there. That's what's up.
It's great. I had such a fun time.
Yeah, I got drunk there a few times. Like really wasted in Tampa. So.
I would love to, but it's one of those things. Like I never kind of made it over there. We did. USF a couple of times.
Yeah, well, we're on the border. So even if you hit like Biloxi or somewhere that's Mississippi or
Yeah, for sure. But I mean that would be dope.
New Orleans.
We're very close to Biloxi, New Orleans.
It seems like you're just trying to get out of Florida. What, Biloxi, New Orleans?
Well, there's not much to do, up here. Actually, you know what? Kevin Hart's coming to Pensacola.
Wow.
Yeah, that's huge here now.
Yeah. I mean,
Pensacola doesn't get too many draws, so.
Really? Why? It's a big. It's a pretty.
I mean,
well-known city.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it does, but from what I understand is this thing's.
How big is it? How big is Pensacola?
I don't know exactly. I know it's, obviously obviously 100,000s or whatever, but I don't want to guess, but I've only been here like a year and a quarter now.
Oh, where are you from?
Orlando, like near Orlando.
Oh, okay.
Like central.
So you left a big city.
Yeah, well, I have a long story that you're probably not interested in.
Of course I would.
Okay, so I lived in a small town, Titusville, Florida, to be exact. It's right by Cocoa, and then I went to Virginia, and then now I'm in Pensacola, unfortunately.
Okay. Pensacola is awesome.
And then Frank's just a douchebag from New York. That's it.
And how did you guys meet?
We met through bad luck. No, I don't know if you've heard of Meetup, but we met through like a hangout where they it's an application where you can meet new people.
Oh, okay, so you guys met on Grindr. Okay, that's good.
No. Sean wishes.
No, trust me. Trust me, I regret going to that event every day, Raj.
Me too. I regret you showed up.
You still keep doing the podcast.
Yeah,
I keep telling him I quit.
And I don't let him quit.
He keeps showing up at my door.
I say we're doing the fucking podcast, bro, whether you like it or not.
A few of the podcasts, if you hear the introduction, I go, who the fuck let you in?
well, make sure you edit mine and get it out there before you quit. Shameless self-promotion. So make sure it gets out there.
Before he quits, we're about to hit 50, and he's like, fuck it, we're done at 50.
That's perfect. That's awesome.
Yeah. So before we close, we always do a thing either we ask the guests to do a sensible or a cynical thought. So do you have advice or anything that you'd like to give Upstart Comics
I'll tell you this. This is a true thing. And this is where, if this hadn't happened, who knows? I was dating this girl after high school. In between going to college, where I would, the love of my life at the moment, at that time. And we got into a really nasty fight, and she broke up with me. And I was trying to apologize, and I had a friend that worked with her at the bookstore, because there were bookstores back then. And,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So, then they worked at the same bookstore, and I would ask Jason, I'm like, yo, just ask Nikki why she won't get back together with me. And he's like, all right, man, it's uncomfortable, but I'll do it. And he comes back, and he goes, okay, here's what she said. I go, hit me with it. She goes, tell Raj that he dreams too big to ever come true. And right. At that moment, I was like, everything I knew is going to be about that. So at a 20-year high school reunion, I saw her, and I walked up, and I said, I have to thank you. She's like, for what? We're good friends. I'm going to see her tomorrow. We're good friends. And I go, I just wanted to thank you because everything I have because of you. And she's looking at me confused as fuck. Like, what is this guy talking about? Mm-hmm. I think he's had one too many whiskeys. And I go, no, everything I have is because of you. Because you told me that I dream dreams too big to ever come true. So any time something comes up in my life where I'm like, I want to do that, I make sure I do it. But every time they put my name up on a marquee, I thank you in my head. Every time I get an audition, or if I get, book something, I thank you. Because mm-hmm. you taught me that you can dream dreams too big and they do come true.
That's awesome, man.
Life. Yeah, for anything in life, man, there's no such thing. There's no such thing as a dream too big.
It's a beautiful story. Did you give her one of your tapes?
I should have done that. Where were you a couple years ago?
Just to make sure you live in a radio.
I'm gonna tell her to listen to I'm gonna go back. I'm gonna see her tomorrow. I'm like, hey, just skip to the end.
Yeah, skip the first 47 episodes and the beginning of the 48.
And then go all the way to the end. You'll hear how I feel about you.
Yeah.
I just want to say thank you guys so much for having me on, man. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, like I said, tell Samuel, give him our information.
I will. And, I'll send him a message. I'll send him a message tonight. Be like, oh, dude, it's a cool fucking podcast. You got to go on and do it. Crazy when you hear a story. But I mean, yeah, I'll go up and let him know for sure.
All right, thank you for your time.
Thanks, man.
All right, take care.
Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, bye. All right, Frank, do you have any sensible or cynical thoughts for the episode after listening to him?
For my sensible thought, it's just, we hear these over and over again, and we hear it again, and it's amazing. It's beautiful. People that, they go and they having to sign a contract and everything, just going above and beyond to make sure that they do what they want to and that they achieve their dream. It's just a beautiful thing, and especially to see them succeed in achieving their dream, it's beautiful, and that's the American dream right there, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, I'm going to go sensible. I mean, it's hard to not go sensible when we have, someone who's kind of made it big in Vegas. I mean, to hear his story, how he's impacted the Indian culture is just amazing. And, I'm just lucky to have him on the show. And subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. Thanks for listening.